Welcome to the Divided Kingdom. This is the news program many of you have come to know and trust. I'm Lou Caverly. My co-host is
Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly.
Tonight we are continuing Dr. Dennis Cuddy. He's going to be back for part two of a riveting discussion of his bombshell book, The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan.
And before that interview, a continuation from our May 25th program, before that ensues, in place of an opening radio monologue written by either Lou or me or both of us, we are bringing you two extremely important naturalnews.com interviews. This first one is perhaps the ordinary people's State of the Union address. The situation of lawlessness and godlessness in America is growing late and dire. We know that even Vladimir Putin is urging American men not to give up their guns.
Special report. The Health Ranger and Steve Quayle discuss the last days of the American Empire. This is published by Natural News, written by Kevin Hughes, May 26, 2023. The Health Ranger, Mike Adams, and Steve Quayle touched on America's demise in a Brighteon.com special report titled The Last Days of the American Empire. You can hear that special report by going to Brighteon.com and actually just search in the search bar for the title of this article, The Last Days of the American Empire. Continuing with the article, we have this quote. We do not celebrate the end of the American Empire, Mike Adams began. This is a sad day. This is a loss for humanity. The American Empire, the America that we know, that we lived in all our lives, is coming to an end through multiple vectors and means, unquote. Quayle agreed, stating that it is indeed a time of mourning as the country is falling apart at the seams. He cited the border issue in Texas, the brewing tension with China over Taiwan, and the Department of the Treasury's trouble as just some of the many problems facing the once glorious nation. The radio host and author said Americans are now watching the controlled demolition, takeover, and takedown of the American Empire. The Health Ranger, meanwhile, remarked that the rise and fall of currencies, nations, and empires follow a cyclical nature. He pointed out that it is of the same pattern repeating continually, just like how the British, Roman, Egyptian, and Japanese empires fared. Quote, no empire lasts forever, and the American Empire is going on for 245-plus years, or whatever the number is, said the Natural News and Brighteon.com founder. The dollar has just about run its course. The nations of the world are abandoning the dollar. These are all signs that point to the end of this empire, unquote. According to Quayle, nations who are part of various trading partnerships have all abandoned the dollar as fast as they can. These include the five-member BRICS bloc, consisting of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries has also eschewed the dollar and favored local currencies. And in a related article, you can read two dozen countries align against the U.S. dollar as BRICS alliance seeks to form new global currency. Then a subtitle, Economic Collapse Designed to Usher in CBDC. In response to Adams' question about the U.S. Treasury debt, Quayle disclosed how the market for its securities, Treasury bills, T-bills, Treasury bonds, T-bonds, and Treasury notes, T-notes, is being abandoned. He added that the U.S. dollar, which used to be the most respected currency around the world, is now the most rejected. Quayle continued that all the ongoing talk of raising the debt ceiling in Congress is irrelevant. This is because no one is buying American T-bills, T-bonds, or T-notes, and Washington can't pay the interest on these securities. Adams remarked that the U.S. government is going to find a way to print more money and pump it into the financial system. However, he pointed out that the problem is the lack of foreign nations or sovereign wealth funds buying the Treasury debt. This essentially means that the Federal Reserve is going to have to buy the debt from the Treasury. Quayle agreed, adding, quote, You can print all the money in the world, but that doesn't bring any more sovereign wealth funds into the United States. So, in essence, we're coming to the end of the empire. We're going down, and we're going dark, unquote. According to the former publisher and editor of Survival Quest, the debt collapse is all by design to usher in the central bank digital currency that can be programmed centrally. The hyperinflationary environment will also trigger chaos, he added. Quayle remarked that this chaos is exactly what the global elite Luciferians want, as it will bring about the new world order they desire. Quayle ultimately remarked that Americans are headed into their most difficult and perilous time in history.
And the second monologue tonight is another article by Mike Adams, Friday, May 26, 2023, Missing Oaths. Biden officials are imposters who swear no allegiance to the United States. Todd Callender. Today's Brighteon Broadcast News features an interview with Lisa McGee and Todd Callender, who reveal that numerous Biden officials, including AG, that's Attorney General Garland, and so-called Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, have no legitimate oaths of office on file. This indicates they have no sworn allegiance to the United States of America and are merely, quote, acting as officials. They are imposters, in other words. And legally speaking, their actions carry no legitimate authority. They are merely bluffing their way through office. It turns out that much of the Biden regime has sworn no loyalty to the United States Constitution or its people. Instead, their loyalties lie outside the USA, with the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, or globalists who wish to see the United States of America utterly destroyed. This is why Mr. Austin, for example, is dedicated to the total destruction of the U.S. military. Only by destroying America's ability to defend itself can the CCP invasion of America succeed. Right now, hundreds of thousands of military-aged males who belong to the CCP are crossing the undefended southern border, positioning themselves for an activation day, at which time they will wage kinetic warfare against the people of America while destroying critical infrastructure such as refineries, power grid stations, bridges, and military bases. Mr. Mayorkas, another, quote, official with no proper sworn oath on file, is committing treason by allowing the CCP to invade the USA with military operatives who will take part. Another, quote, official with no proper sworn oath on file is committing treason by allowing the CCP to invade the USA with military operatives who will take part in this kinetic war against this nation. Similarly, the ATF is actively seeking to disarm the American public by turning tens of millions of arm brace owners into felons through a flip-flop rule change that goes into effect in just a few days. The takedown of America is a coordinated, treasonous, lawless affair that's being run by corrupt criminals who aren't even legitimate government officials. They are imposters working for an illegitimate regime that rigged the 2020 election and was never even voted into power by the American people. And now this is Elizabeth Cuppett-Caverly again. Next, before we join Lou and Dr. Dennis Cuddy, here are some very important breaking headlines.
First, we have John Kerry. Excuse me. John Kerry declares war on U.S. farmers. Government farm confiscations, quote, not off the table, unquote. This was on the People's Voice, May 18th, 2023. Small farms are significant emitters of nitrogen, according to Biden's climate czar, John Kerry, who is pushing for the U.S. federal government to crack down on farming in America to combat global warming.
And you see here, listeners, the State of the Union address that we said was for ordinary people. Everything that you hold dear, everything that you need, your occupation, your customs, your food, everything is being obliterated. Lou and I had a terrible reaction to something in some of our food. We don't know whether it was just food poisoning, but I was late getting to the phone because of this. Lou was almost incapacitated mentally the other day to the point that he said imbecilically, we're going to have a great election for the president and the will of the people will be understood again. And I looked at him, what was wrong? Well, lots of things are wrong, and we really are telling you, you'd better look carefully, you'd better take Mike Adams' advice. If you're going to eat beef, if you're going to eat pork, cook it very well. Perhaps the mRNA in the vaccines given to those cattle, we think it's probably going forward, and it's been in the pork for maybe 10 years, it might be disabled, Mike Adams thinks. So maybe you will change some of your eating habits. We do not recommend vegetarianism. As we've said before, studies showed brain shrinkage in people who only avoid all kinds of meat and protein. And you do need B12. Every one of you who is over 50 years old, you think you're getting it in your vitamin capsules. No, you're not. The body doesn't make enough intrinsic factor to digest B12. So, hence, we have people who are mislabeled as having Alzheimer's. We knew of a person who always had hallucinations in a nursing home when her B12 was low. So you want to go to some good company, Solgar is one, and you get the kind of B12 that you put under your tongue. You wait an hour before you take it if you've eaten or drunk water, and then an hour afterward. Don't eat or drink water afterward. And you need to be taking the B12 all the time. You need to try to get off a lot of the prescription drugs. Now, we must move on because we have so much to cover. But first of all, I want to thank the listeners. Several of you have helped us, and you have helped Dr. Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy still needs a lot of help. He has a $1,400 or $1,500 car repair bill, and he needs that air conditioning. And with what Lou and I went through, I was very honest with you. I didn't plan to tell you what happened here to us, but you know, these terrible satanic attacks, this was probably the second worst one we've ever had, because I cried. And I said, Lou, we're going to have to stop the radio work. No, you heard Lou with his big booming voice. You heard his intellect. He's a very brilliant man. And I'm pleased and proud he's my husband. And Carolyn, our wonderful listener who helps us. Here came her note today. Greetings, ones. And she has called us dear ones before. Winning the race and enduring to the end. My kind of people. Keep up the good work. Carolyn, you didn't know how much we needed that. Thank you. Then we had a letter from Clarence. Clarence said, Dear Lou and Elizabeth, this morning when Elizabeth was talking about illegal immigrants in New York, she was blocked for about 10 minutes. We, the people, wanted to hear, but were denied. This country is moving toward communism more every day. The Chinese have a lot of control that most people don't know about and won't listen when they hear about it. They believe the media that only lies to them. It's good to hear you and Elizabeth tell us the truth and do so good at it. I'll close and hope to hear you for years to come. The Lord bless you, as I'm sure he does. Wonderful letter from Clarence. And also, we're going to say right now that today when we get to Dr. Cuddy, we're going to talk more about the Nazi book. Lou and Dennis will do this. And then I'm going to bring up Milosevic and the parallel here with Putin. The warrant for his arrest and how the globalists are trying to consolidate into one huge world union. But we also want you to know, listeners, that we have to have something to live for. And Dennis's wonderful gift came to us, his brand new Conspiracy 2 book. And we thank him for it. So last night I started into it. And I'm going to have him talk about the COVID chapter, too, today. We'll have time for that. But there was one chapter there, Once Upon a Time, 1960, in which Dennis reminisces what a beautiful life he had there in probably Raleigh, North Carolina, and what it was like in those days. And I was thinking about this. All of us who are part of the divided kingdom, and that's you, listeners, Lou and me, we have memories of the old America, and we want Dennis to come back with us on June 22nd, Thursday night, June 22nd, and we're going to have sort of a remembrance of the old America, the times that we enjoyed as children and teenagers. And I invite you listeners to think back. Maybe you were a child or a teen in the 50s even, 60s, 70s. And if you would like to share some of the enjoyment that you had, for instance, you know, I think Dennis Cuddy talked about different things he did at the YWCA. There were lots of things, so many things that he got to do. And whatever you got to do, if you were on a farm, maybe you were outdoors, if you would like to write and share some things, you do not have to identify yourself. And naturally, we're never going to use your last name on air. You can send them to us. And that's Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Again, that's Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. So we'll be looking forward to that June 22nd time, too. Now, very quickly, so we don't take much more time here, I wish to thank that wonderful Pennsylvania doctor who had picked up another shift thanks to your prayers. I want to thank Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, we got your wonderful help. Thank you so much. And a wonderful pen pal out in Missouri. I think that I wrote her back and forgot to thank her for what she enclosed to help us. But she had something interesting, how pervasive this thing has gotten into our ordinary lives. Now think, out in rural Missouri, in the schools, they're putting cat litter boxes for the students who think they're cats. Will it never end? So now we're moving on in these headlines quickly. Here's the next one. WHO warns about unusual surge of severe myocarditis cases in newborns and infants. This was the People's Voice, May 22nd, 2023. Lou?
And we have one Facebook declares war on Christianity. Praising Jesus is hate speech and will be removed. This is also the People's Voice, May 19th. Facebook's war against conservatives and Christianity has reached absurd new heights, with the social media dinosaur banning the phrase, Jesus died so you could live, declaring it hate speech. That has no place in the platform. One religion's fundamental principles should not be considered more or less acceptable than those of another, regardless of whether a moderator, like a Silicon Valley left-wing activist, agrees or not. However, when a Christian posts the statement, Jesus died so you could live, which is one of the core beliefs of Christianity, the individual behind the post will find themselves accused of hate speech on Facebook.
Barack Obama, we need full-blown government censorship to eradicate independent media. And again, I believe that this was the People's Voice. Former President Barack Hussein Obama has urged the Biden regime to declare a national emergency and use its powers to eradicate all independent media online ahead of the 2024 election. And, you know, before I move to the next bombshell one, there was another letter, and this letter had no street address, but it said, hello, your May 18th program was excellent. It's not always like that. And the person means when he goes to the, he or she goes to the mainstream media press and radio. It's not always like that. The program had a variety of relevant news, news that I haven't heard. Thank you for upholding the Lord. As Peter said, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. And now the last breaking news that we had was what I alluded to before, and again, this is the People's Voice. Putin tells U.S. citizens, do not give up your guns. The right to bear arms to defend oneself and possessions against a deadly force has been entrenched in American culture and protected in the U.S. Constitution since its creation in 1791. And now, Lou, we go to you, and you're going to welcome Dr. Dennis Cuddy shortly.
Yes, yes, Elizabeth. Last week, we had the privilege of interviewing Dr. Dennis Cuddy about his superlative book, The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan. In part one of this two-part interview, Dr. Cuddy explained the secret Nazi plan in the 1940s to send thousands of officials, Nazi officials, underground. $800 million was sent to Argentina alone.
Let me interrupt to just say, if you listeners missed that program, please go to our archives, DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and go into the listening archives, and you'll find that program.
That's right. And preparations for the culmination of this Nazi plan and socialist world domination was set to occur in about two generations from World War II. Before we move on to tonight with Dr. Cuddy discussing the power elite's hidden plan and American corporate entities' role in aiding the Nazi war effort, I think we want to have Dr. Cuddy flesh out the portraits of the men who were involved in various ways in promoting that Nazi plan, men like Martin Bormann, Paul Dekoff, Reinhard Gehlen, Ellen Dulles, and John McCoy. One person who used the term, the power elite, was Fletcher Prouty. In his own book, JFK, the CIA, Vietnam, and the Plot to Assassinate John F. Kennedy. I came across a quote from Ben Franklin this week. He said, three may keep a secret, if two of them are dead. That quote seemed fitting to describe the horrifying secrets of bones of murdered people found in the 1990s under Franklin's London residence. Who would have thought one of America's founding patriots and Hellfire Club member would have had such secrets? But those who know too much must sometimes die. Dr. Cuddy, welcome to the program. We're delighted to have you with us again. Let's begin with more details about Martin Bormann's role in planning and facilitating the Nazi long-range plan.
Okay, but if we could have a little bit of time at the end, I want to comment on the things that you said so far, because as you were talking, a whole slew of things came to my mind from my other books. So I want to touch on them maybe later.
Yes, but also, Dennis, since your gift came to us, I want to specifically talk with you about the one chapter on COVID, Dr. Fleming's chart, and those aspects of that book. You're going to have some time, and you know, we're going to be inviting you back because you have so many important things to say. I think we'll have time for you to respond also. Go ahead, Blue.
Yes, go ahead, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay, well, there's a number of individuals, and I tend to not only look at the individual and the situation, but since I used to teach history, I sort of have a historical background, which leads one up to how we got to a particular point. So, Martin Bormann, and you have to understand, there's a secret Nazi plan coming to fulfillment. There's a secret communist plan coming to fulfillment. And it's the power elite controls both. It's a dialectical process where they use both far left and far right to accomplish their goals. And there's a lot of intermixture. Like, people will say they're communists, but they also play footsie with the Nazis, right, and vice versa. So what happens is the power elite usually picks these people up when they're very young, and I know this stuff because they had in mind that I would be one of these, but I tended to ask too many questions, and they don't act against you. You just don't find the doors opening that were opening in the past, in the future. They don't do it. They just drop you and move on. But Martin Bormann would be part of this effort, the Dulles brothers part of this effort, and so forth. And the sense that when the Dulles brothers, for example, were young, Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles, at least one of them was compromised by a Russian spy and also a Nazi spy, and they would insinuate themselves. Oftentimes, it
which
was
one?
A woman pretending to be
one was compromised.
Well, they both were, but actually it was John Foster Dulles that was more compromised. But it's like Martin Bormann too. Martin Bormann had a Russian girlfriend. A Russian. He's a Nazi, but he has this Russian girlfriend. So, you know, that makes you start to wonder to what extent he was really a dedicated Nazi and so on. And then I try to provide documents. I think, like I said last time, I put in the Secret Nazi Plan book a photostat copy of a joint bank account Martin Bormann had with Juan Perón, who was the dictator of Argentina. And this is in the mid, it lasted until the mid-1960s, and when everybody is saying that Bormann died at the railroad track and then the bombing at the end of World War II. And same thing with Hitler. Same. So a lot of these things, you have to know the sort of historical background that comes up. So what happened, I mentioned Hitler last time, and we won't get into him right now, because he was just useful in terms of mesmerizing the general German population. He was only corporal in the First World War, so he was no military genius. So the people who formed the secret plan were mainly Martin Bormann, the party chief, and Heinrich Himmler, head of the SS. Himmler wasn't even there. And they sat down, and I mentioned in the book a couple of the generals from the German general staff, Kaltenbrunner and another one, who would be executed. And there were two phases, as you said. There were 200 to 300 thousand second, third level Nazis who went underground and during the secret plan. They were known as the Underground Reich. They took off their swastikas and no goose stepping. They just looked like ordinary shopkeepers and clockmakers and so forth. And they would form the internal basis within Germany for executing the plan, you know, communications and funding and all that sort of stuff. But Bormann was primarily the money person. He and Himmler was sending his SS guys all around the world. They would go to Iran and look Iranian and speak Farsi. Bormann handled the money, mainly the money, whether they had, you know, stolen gold out of executed Jewish people or anybody else. And I don't want to harp too much on Jewish people, because before there was even the massive killings of Jews in gas chambers, they were killing the mentally ill first, or the defective, they would call them, dysgenic
stuff. That's like the T4 plan.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. And I put a picture of how it looks very kindly. There's a man with a white shirt and, you know, his usual medical uniform. Has this old man in a wheelchair, and he's looking right, very nice. The old man is going to be killed in a kindly way. It's all presented as very kindly. And they rationalize that if we kill these mentally ill people, this is before the lots of Jewish people were killed, before we can save this much money to buy housing for our new young Aryan race types. All very rational, you know, presented very, very logically like that. And there were secret aspects of the plan. Like there was, to the German people, they were the pure Aryan race, right? Even though Hitler and Himmler and the rest of these guys were not blue-eyed blondes. They were not. And so secretly, yeah, for his global plot, Hitler would include Native Americans. He said they're Aryans too, you know. So he had a global plan. And the audience, it depended on the audience how he was selling this thing around the world. So anyway, so Bormann was the money person, as Lou said, that it was $800 million in Argentina alone, but it was tons and tons of money. Now, they didn't just have money and sitting on the money. They didn't just sit there, okay, here's my money, you know, like Scrooge McDuck, that cartoon character was rolling around in all his money. What happened was you had to have an international mechanism. So the Bank for International Settlements was the international mechanism. That's the central bank, still is today, of all the central banks. Bundesbank, Federal Reserve, Bank of Japan all belong to this Bank for International Settlements. And I forget whether I put in this book, I don't think I do, I put in one of my other books a picture of the new, it was built in 1985, Bank for International Settlements, and it's like the shape of a boot. And that comes from Orwell, a boot stamping on a human face forever. So the symbolism is very clear there.
Is it in Switzerland?
Yes. The new one was 1985. Before that, it began really with the Hague Agreement in 1930 and J.P. Morgan, those guys. But it was a long-range plan for all this stuff.
But where is it?
So long-range that when it began, the Nazis were in control. I mean, right from the beginning of the 30s, the Nazis controlled this bank. But they didn't want the people to really know that and appreciate it. So they got this man named Thomas McKittrick, an American, and made him the titular head. So everybody said,
Is that in Bern, Switzerland?
Yes, Bern, Switzerland, yeah. That's also where
it is.
That's also where Alan Dulles and Paul Dekoff worked in tandem. Dekoff was Himmler's SS guy from the beginning of our involvement in the war. They were there working together. You know, us and the Nazis, it would work okay because we were involved in all this.
Lou was going to ask you to really expand on Dekoff's role. That was fascinating to me, too, when I read that, how many different things go into that because and the Interpol role that you discussed.
Yeah, well, like I said, this is long range. This isn't a planned, okay, in 1944, we're going to do such. No, no, right from the beginning, this was a multi-decade plan, way, way back. It was like the First World War. That was a multi-generation, way before the First World War. So in Dekoff's case, he was a very trusted person who was under Heinrich Himmler. And Himmler was also working with us. I mean, not openly, but through intermediaries, he was working with us. That's why I think I mentioned last time, if you look at that BBC presentation, you can see it online. It's called Himmler's Castle, and it's very interesting. It looks like an occult place. It wasn't a cult place. They held, you know, basically weird ceremonies there. But in Himmler's Castle, the statement toward the end of the video of Himmler's Castle produced by the BBC, it says a secret American team got in there and quickly got into this secret vault that even the commandant, the Nazi commandant of the castle, didn't know about. Now, the only way he could do that is if Himmler told them where to look. So they go in, they get the secret stuff from the team, and the secret material disappears. Just disappears. I think I'm pretty sure what that secret material showed was Himmler had been working with us right from the get-go. I mean, right from the beginning. So Himmler is not...
It seems that Himmler also survived, unlike the standard line.
And we've discussed that last week.
Yes.
We won't stay long on that. Let's move to your next person, John McCloy.
Yeah, okay. I think it's interesting, too, that two of these out of the five or six main people ended up in the Warren Commission.
The Warren Commission was, I mean, the average person said, oh, these look like respectable guys. But if you look at it, you got, I think, Gerald Ford, who was sort of a doofus, you know, I'll do whatever you say type of, they used to joke about Gerald Ford, he couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time. You had McCloy there, you had Alan Dulles there, who JFK had fired as head of the CIA, so he had a little revenge. There was a series of it. Now, McCloy in particular, McCloy goes way back to the 1930s, right in there when he's a younger fellow. So, just like I was being groomed to be part of this system, McCloy was. McCloy's entree was he was a tennis partner at a club where some of these prominent, you know, Council on Foreign Relations type guys worked. So he gets to know them. He gets to know them, and he gets content. You know, basically in Washington, or anybody say who you know. It's not what you know. It's who you know. You have these contacts. So McCloy became an indispensable person in Washington and the network of contacts, because when Henry Stimson, the Secretary of War, went to Washington, he brought McCloy with him as an assistant. And then one of the things I put a quote in the book is Stimson says, nobody does anything in Washington without this guy, McCloy, without having to talk to him. So he was like the predecessor of Kissinger or Brzezinski, Kissinger for the Republicans, Brzezinski for the Democrats. See, they all have these facilitators like that. And I think I told you last time about how the power elite never itself or anyone particular says, go kill somebody. I think I gave the example of, they say, isn't it a shame that so-and-so is the ruler of this country in Central America? And so the guy listens, they communicates that to the Central American operatives, and they say, isn't it a shame? And the signal is, if this guy wasn't around, you would get lots of money invested, and maybe a little in your Swiss bank account, that sort of thing. So these guys are never really explicit, like, go kill such and such, except in certain instances, like Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles was head of the CIA, and in 1959, he got this young guy who we wanted to put in power. We put him in power, we take him out, we put him in, we take him out, and named Saddam Hussein. He was part of a six-member CIA-supported assassination group. The assignment was to assassinate the Prime Minister of Iraq, Sodom isn't real efficient, though. He blew it. But the CIA got him, took him back to put him in a later time. Same thing with Gaddafi and so on. So sometimes when you're like in an official position in government, you can do these things. And you mentioned L. Fletcher Prouty. L. Fletcher Prouty was head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Operational Unit. And he, and I put these quotes in there, he would say flat out, there's this group, and they're separate from government, but they have all the information that the CIA has and in available to them in the government, and he said they literally will make and break empires. Just you know, this group, not the government, this group will say, okay, let's overthrow, you know, Ecuador, whatever the country, or Chile, or something like that. So L. Fletcher Prouty is a really good source, and he was the guy who was going to go to talk to Jack Ruby about what had happened to Oswald and that, because Ruby said, I'll tell you, L. Fletcher, everything you want to know if you get me out of here, but Fletcher Prouty couldn't get him out before that quick-acting cancer did Ruby in. And, you know, if you look at the picture, they're not protecting Oswald. They're pulling his hands apart so he can get a good shot at Oswald. Anyway, all that stuff. And I'm just saying Fletcher Prouty is a really good source of some valuable information.
Yes, and you know, now I'm watching the time because we do want to have a lot of time for you to respond even to the earlier things we said. I think that pretty well gives a good overview of those men.
Okay.
And now, Lou, you were going to get into the Arab you know, combination there with the Nazis and so forth. But I think why don't you move right to, and we won't do a long time on this, but the corporate involvement in America. Lou, you pick up what you want to ask Dennis.
Well, I know that kind of an overlap, both Dulles and McCloy were lawyers who had connections with I.G. Farben. And then Ford and some of the other companies were still making equipment for the Nazis, even though they were enemies of us. Can you expand upon that a little bit?
Well, there's, in talking about that, you have to be careful about what time frame, because in Ambassador Dodd, for example, in the 30s, our ambassador, he couldn't understand why American companies were still investing in Germany when it was clear they were building up armaments. And then later, they weren't so open about it, but you will find that sort of secretly, like the head of ITT, he would go over there and help them, the Nazis. Now, this is before we were involved in 1943 and so on. Before that, he would go over there and make them more efficient in their communications. IBM, the holograph, I'm not holographic, it's a holograph, predecessor to the computer, they would make them more efficient, which later on was very important for the Nazis to following people, not only Jews, but other people, wherever they were. You know, it's sort of like today. On the Internet, you can find anybody. You can look at truepeoplesearch.com and find out where Lou lives and his email and his relatives and all, everything. Well, this was the same type of system that they had developed in the early 1930s. And the Nazis were, you know, using it. And there were about 100 of these, I can't name them all, 100 of these American corporate leaders who were helping the Nazis. Now, it went sort of underground and dissipated after we got involved. But, you know, the damage is done. And so,
in your book talked about the denial of certain airplane parts to Britain by some company, I think.
I think it was Ford.
Ford?
Is that right?
Well, while they were helping the Nazi armaments.
Well, you have to remember, Henry Ford loved Hitler, Nazis. I mean, he never, even after we got to the war ourselves, Henry Ford would, you know, hey, Hitler's a great guy, that sort of stuff. He was very upfront about all this. Henry Ford was. And a number of people were, too. Now, some of them, it was a little, you have to explain it, like Nelson Rockefeller. He was, David Rockefeller worked with the communists, Nelson Rockefeller worked with the Nazis. Now, immediately you'll listen and say, oh, so he's a secretly a Nazi. No, Nelson's position was that he thought communism was a greater threat going forward. Nevertheless, he was working with the Nazis, and I think last time I mentioned their little plot to have their sister Eleanor, the Dulles' sister Eleanor, find the document, gives it to her Zionist friends. They confronted Nelson, and
yes,
Nelson,
yes.
We went through that last time. Now, about the Arabs, that you mentioned that. The Arabs, like groups like Hamas and Hezbollah, still give the Nazi salute today. And in Egypt, for example, you would have the Green Movement, even after the Second World War, and Anwar Sadat saying nice things about Hitler. You know, they didn't care. In fact, they probably liked his killing of many Jews. And I gave, I think, an example of FDR saying to Secretary of State Stettinius, he was going to meet with Ibn Saud, the head of the Saudi royal family, and he says, I'm going to tell him I got 6 million Jews he can have. You know, this is going towards the end of the war, and even then, and they knew about what was happening in Europe. Their intelligence was pretty good during the Second World. They knew who Hitler was killing in Auschwitz and all that sort of stuff. So there was a very, very strong element among the Arab and Muslim nations in support of it. You can actually go online and look at images, you know, not just all, but you have images, videos, and click on images, and you can see a lot of Muslim groups today that have Nazi symbols. They're still using Nazi symbols and Nazi, you know, like I said,
yes, and the Nazis
letter.
In Ukraine. You know, I think that pretty well gives an overview of that. And then I'd like to move to this question. In your book, you talked a lot about Bill Clinton and Milosevic, and I see a parallel there with Vladimir Putin now having a warrant out for his arrest. And your point was that eventually the New World Order wants to keep grouping countries into unions till they finally have the consolidation of the final world government. And isn't there a parallel there? Maybe you would tell the listeners, remind them what happened with Milosevic and what you think the parallel is there with Putin, who's beleaguered.
All right, now, one has to be careful about this stuff, but always remember that there's a power elite sitting above all these leaders, and they use both ends or both sides to create, you know, order out of chaos and all this disturbance and so forth and so on. All right, so if you look at Milosevic, he was a ruler. He wasn't a sweetheart in Serbia. It was Yugoslavia. Serbia, all right, and then you would have Tito was before him, the dictator and so forth, in Yugoslavia, which was a combination of several, which broke apart into various countries, like Serbia. So in Serbia, where Milosevic was, you would have the Kosovo. That was another part of the greater, what was called Yugoslavia, would be supported by us. Now, we're supposed to be against al-Qaeda. But al-Qaeda and some Albanians and some of our Nazi buddies got together and they trained the Kosovo Liberation Army to go back to Kosovo, sneak across the border into Serbia, assassinate Serbian policemen and mayors, then run back into Serbia. And whenever Milosevic said, we can't tolerate this, and they would come after him, they'd cry, humanitarian crisis. And that was pre-planned by Madeleine Albright and a couple of Carnegie-supported meetings where they said, we got to develop some means of intervening wherever we want to. And they settled on humanitarian crisis. So the first big one was this. We got to go in and help those poor Kosovo liberation. I'm not, even Milosevic wasn't a sweetheart, but this was all a setup. So when they grab him, and I still don't know why they would grab him and not Gorbachev. If you're going to grab anybody, Gorbachev was in charge of that Afghanistan, all those placement of little exploding toys that tore the heads off of little children. So if you're going to drag Milosevic up before the Hague, International Criminal Court, surely you would drag Gorbachev. But no, see, there's a plan for Gorbachev. And that plan goes back, we're not going to get into it, back to 1931, blah, blah, blah. So Milosevic was treated differently. And then, wow, lo and behold, the poor guy seems to have killed himself. There's a lot of that. You know, like the anthrax the guy who was supposed to have done the anthrax Fort Detrick, oh, look, he killed himself. These people are always killing themselves, you know, so you can't find out.
Conveniently.
So
now what about Putin? And now, you know, we know that Russia has always been beleaguered by NATO, and the lies have been there. Actually, we even found in the AP, back when we were neophyte broadcasters, even the AP said that the West went into Georgia first. It wasn't Putin. So now he's in this danger with this warrant out, and it looks like there was an assassination attempt. Is this the same power elite that don't want him because he doesn't want to join the New World Order?
Well, now, again, you have to be careful about this, because what happened to Putin and Georgia and so forth was pre-planned by Brzezinski. See, Brzezinski's sort of sly and sneaky and behind the scenes, and he would not admit to luring the Soviet Union into Afghanistan. 20 years later, he said, yeah, I did. I had a plan to lure them in there. So Brzezinski, in terms of Georgia, was luring Putin in there to set sort of a precedent. And what's the precedent? That no one nation... And you would think he'd want America, right? America to be dominant. No, no, no one nation, the U.S., Russia, nobody would be in charge or anything. What's that? That's the power elite, where no one nation, including a nation, would want any dominance. So that the power elite in general, overarching all the nations. Now, you can say what you did about Putin, and that's true. But remember, he also is an actor. Reagan was an actor. They're all actors. All of these leaders are actors in this huge plot, which I describe in my books, The Secret Records of Evil, The Globalist, all the whole series, not just these current ones. And so Putin, for example, I think he now has a warrant out for Lindsey Graham, doesn't he?
Milosevic was killed, and I believe there is real animosity. I mean, we're aware that the World Economic Forum, there was a young leader, and that was Putin, but I believe that now he has made a stand to keep Russia and the Orthodox Christianity free. He doesn't have the LGBTQ movement. There are certain things about him that don't fit a profile that he is one of the globalists.
Oh, no, no, they're not, but they're used by us, like Nelson Rockefeller or Nixon. Nixon was used by them. He wasn't a Nazi. He was used by them. I mentioned last time.
Yes, exactly. We agree with you very much. And now, you know, I want to move on because I have to see this clock ticking. I want to get to you this wonderful book, and thank you for sending us Conspiracy 2. And let's give out the phone number that listeners can get your brand new Conspiracy 2 with Nelson Rockefeller, or David Rockefeller, excuse me, on the cover. Yeah. The phone number, do you know it? I know it. But if you don't,
1-800-652-1144. And this
again.
One is 1-800-652-1144.
Yes, and this is a book that has many varied chapters, and they're all very essential. And you heard us say we would really like you to come back on June the 22nd, where we will have some of the things that we all lived for, your chapter there, Once Upon a Time. But I want to move right now, I think it's to page... I can't see that number. It's in your chapter, The Origin of COVID-19. I want to get your information there that actually talked about Ralph Baric. And he says, we thank Dr. Zheng Shi of the Wuhan Institute of Virology for access to the bat COV sequences and plasmid. Anyway, would you get into that this research was actually supported by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease and the National Institute of Aging of the NIH under awards U19A110961 and so forth. You have the actual documentation of Ralph Baric and Dr. Fleming's chart. Now, I see that we have about 11 minutes left, and we really would like to give you a little time, too, to respond to our opening monologues. But what can you tell us there about Ralph Baric and the NIH and Fauci
all
and
right,
the bat lady?
Ralph Barrick was leading Corona. He actually went to my alma mater, NC State University, on the swim team and so on. But he became the leading coronavirus man in the world. And he was always getting patents, you know, because that means money. And they came up with remdesivir and all these sort of things. But he was doing his thing for a while. And then in 2014, the head of NIH, National Institute of Health, Francis Collins, says this stuff's dangerous, it poses a security risk and so on, so I'm going to stop funding it. So the always benevolent, thoughtful Chinese come forward and say, well, we'll fund it, but you got to take our Dr. Xingli Liji, who at that time was their leading coronavirus person, and she brings the plasmid and the spike protein. That's what a virus is, a protein with little spikes all in. And Richard Fleming has in his, and I put, what is this? He had an event 2020 or something like that, where he actually puts a blow up of the spike, and he shows where they attached HIV, for example, you know, foreign invades. He shows each in detail where they attached all this nasty little stuff to it to make it the mean, evil thing that it became. So he's very good at that. He's a physician and an attorney and smart fellow. So anyway, so in 2015, Barrick and Xi co-author an article which basically says, you know, wonderful thing, we've just engineered a new coronavirus that can get into human airwaves. They're really tickled pink about that. And that's the same year when Bill Gates just happened to deliver the TED Talks, where he said specifically in the future there'll be this virus or microbe, he says microbes, that will get into human airwaves, but you won't know you have it right away. You may go to a market, and I put like Wuhan, or get on a plane like, you know, from there to Seattle, where it started to spread across the U.S. and then the East, too, from Italy, like that. And so at that same year, though, the leading coronavirus, Zhu Dejong, who had written way back in the early 2000, around 2003, that he didn't think SARS-CoV-1 was accidental, probably blamed us for it. He didn't think it was accidental. He writes, he edits a 261-page document saying how they could use it as a bioweapon, sort of maybe like revenge, right? And he's very specific. It's not just against troops. It's how they can hurt healthcare systems, which, you know, people in the world did. They hurt their health care system. So then if there's any military application, the Chinese military get into the act. Now, Xi at first said, oh, no, I don't work with those people. But there's pictures of her working with Chinese military. So another woman takes over just before the outbreak in China, Major General Chen Wei. So the Chinese military is really getting the act, and I think they probably picked up on the 2015 261-page paper that Zhu Dejong wrote about the bioweapon. So this is, you know, their thing. They see this as an opportunity to move forward. And so that's how that worked out. Now, in terms of Daszak, Fauci's not stupid. He's the highest paid person, and his wife's getting a lot of money, too, in this whole act. So he did not want to be caught directly funding Wuhan. So he funds Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance, and they, in turn, fund Wuhan. Now, the reason I put down specific grant numbers is everybody said, oh, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. So what I did is, even when Fauci redefines gain of function, I put down the grant numbers so you, the reader, can go on the internet and look up that specific grant, and you'll say, even though he redefined it, he's still funding gain of function. He knew exactly what he was doing. So I put all the detailed information to show not
yes,
only...
Yes, that's so important. And the chronology from Dr. Fleming in that chapter
right.
in your book so important, too, there in 2008, the NIAID grant number.
Yeah.
It's so good to have that information. It was so good that you brought up the HIV component that was put in.
Yeah.
Dr. Luc Montagnier, the actual discoverer
yeah.
of the HIV virus, and people people in India, scientists, had said that early on. Now, this is so important that people do get your book. There's so much in it, and that's 1-800-652-1144, Conspiracy 2. And now, we want to give you a little time. There's not too much time, maybe 5 minutes or so. You want to respond to what we talked about in the beginning, the Mike Adams and the Todd Colander, about the oaths, the fraudulent oaths of office, the missing oaths, and the money system, whatever you would like to do to respond.
Well, I'll just hit highlights. In my book,
sure.
Secret Records Revealed, back in 1995, I put, like I said, a historical thing, and I pick up there on 666. The understanding may be the First Kings 10:14 and Second Chronicles, which indicates 666 with the weight and talents of gold. And then I move on to Solomon, the Sidonians, and Benjamin Disraeli's book, Koningsby, Who Rules from Behind the Scene, Sidonia. And in Revelation, the final battle takes place in Armageddon, and they fortified in Solomon's time. Gezer, Hazor, and Megiddo are Megiddo, right, like that. And whoever controlled the Vias Maris controlled the trade of the day, and so through trade and economics, that's what they're doing now. They're controlling the world economically at first. And the key point will be 2025. And Alice Bailey said that in a work that she did back in the early 30s. In 2025, the World Federation of Nations will be taking rapid shape, and everything seems to be in place, because I mentioned, I think, last time, Kamala Harris's grandparents are from the region where you had it's called Shambhala, where the Aryans, who are the only survivors of Atlantis' destruction, went. So everything is being put in place and so forth. And H.G. Wells also said a long time ago it will be taking rapid shape as it gets nearer and nearer to hand. And that's why Orwell had to write they would quicken the tempo of human life. Everything is part of this plan. And if you read all my books, like Secret Records Revealed, and then the sequel is The Globalist, which fights as much information, and the book that you're talking about, which is Conspiracy 2, that's the first volume of Conspiracy, which goes into a lot more interesting
information. Yes, we talked about it on air, Dennis, before
okay.
We interviewed you. We had a whole program on it
okay.
One evening. This
okay.
is so interesting that you are now bringing out the spiritual, the occult.
That's right.
This is the integral aspect, maybe the top aspect, isn't it? The capstone on the pyramid, in God
yeah.
we trust. It's not the God we thought in America,
no,
is it?
No. No, and George H.W. Bush was supposed to go there in the year 2000 with the millennial and all to witness the final capping of the stone, but they had to delay a little longer. See, it's not until 2025 that this thing is supposed to come to rapid shape, and then Klaus Schwab said by 2030 you will own nothing, but you will be happy, and that goes back to the book Our Benevolent Feudalism, written by W.J. again in 1902, which is extremely detailed exactly what's going to happen to you and everybody
else.
Now,
Dennis, some of your other books, can people find out how to get them?
Same phone number. You just ask them and they can print them on demand. Same phone number.
All right.
800-652-1144.
Yes, 1-800-652-1144. Dennis, we look forward to you again on June the 22nd. This time, it'll be more of a nostalgia and a celebration of what
okay.
we really love about America and what we still hope God will restore through urging us to repent. Thank you so much for this wonderful, dynamic interview.
Thank you. You're welcome. I appreciate it.
Lou, it's really wonderful, isn't it, Lou?
It is. We thank all of you for listening to the program. Invite you to come back next week.
We thank Almighty God for protecting all of us.
We do.
Dennis, Lou, me, and your families. We pray for those who've been harmed by those COVID shots. Please pray for everyone who's part of the divided kingdom. Good night.